Atomic batteries are powerful. Turbines are speed.
Now, everything old is new again. America's entertainment pop culture talk show.
It may well possess a rudimentary intelligence.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Felt a great disturbance in the force.
Hello, I'm Mr. Ray.
Come on, bark like a dog for me.
Where's the goodies?
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
I bet you wouldn't have done anything like this if Mom and Dad were here.
You filthy criminal.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Here are your hosts, Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
If there's something I could do, don't you think I would do it? You know me, I would like to help you out.
Thank you. What can I say?
I don't know what. I don't know anything about the restaurant business. Nothing. All I know is to sit down and order a meal. I don't know how to make a restaurant.
Welcome to Everything Old is New Again. We're going to prove Paul Sorvino wrong in some ways on Everything Old is New Again. We're here with the rather famished David Cohen.
Yes, greetings.
Why are you famished?
Well, because we're going to be talking with Mr. Sorvino very soon about something that has to do with food.
Absolutely, and his wife Dee Dee. We're going to have the pleasure of speaking with the actor, singer, philanthropist, artist, and now chef and author, Paul Sorvino, and his wife, Emmy Award-winning TV host and radio personality, Dee Dee Sorvino. Yes, this week and next, Everything Old is New Again hosts Paul Sorvino, who not only played, as you just heard, Paulie Cicero, right, in Goodfellas, but
correct,
has appeared in over 200 films and television, including a favorite of mine, Star Trek Next Generation, The Goldbergs, Elementary, Law and Order, Murder, She Wrote. We could go on and on. He also was in the movie Dick Tracy, Rocketeer, just to name a few. He is a gifted sculptor, artist, philanthropist, and has established the Paul Sorvino Asthma Foundation, whose purpose is to vanquish asthma. Well, David, you have a little couple more words, and we'll
sure,
finally get to the conversation.
Yeah, we'll probably let them speak, right? Paul is also joined by his wife, Dee Dee Sorvino, a radio and TV personality. She's appeared on Fox News, Fox Business Channel, etc. She was also a former aide to President George W. Bush. And on April 18th, they have a cookbook coming out called Pino, Pasta, and Parties. And it's an Italian cookbook with over 80 recipes. And we're looking forward to that and talking about that today with them as well.
So welcome, welcome, Dee Dee. And Paul, thank you for coming on Everything Old is New Again.
Well, you know, it's funny that you played the clip when Paul said, I don't know anything about the restaurant business. What are you talking about? Because before I met Paul, he will tell you, when I wanted to make something, I really just made reservations. And that was it. I was used to going out to eat all the time. But when you marry an Italian, you eat at home. You eat the sausages and the spaghetti and any pasta, but it's called macaroni. So I've learned all of this very quickly. And I told Paul, I said, we've got to do a cookbook. You're an amazing cook. Paul's been cooking since he was like 12. So he's great, and I really prefer cocktails. So there's a signature cocktail in every chapter, and one of them is the Goodfellas, and it's very strong and wonderful. You gentlemen would enjoy it.
Oh, well, I'm sure.
From what I understand, each chapter of the book, and there's 10 chapters from what I understand, contains a theme of a whole meal. In other words, a themed meal you could do. You start with the cocktail, which I think is important to even maybe have while you're cooking the meal, but we'll get to that.
I agree.
Appetizers, main dishes, and a dessert. Basically, you tell me, is it for 10 different meals? Is that how the book's laid out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we initially weren't just going to do a strict menu per theme, and then we kind of branched out, and there's some reference pages saying, well, if you want the red sauce, here's the red sauce, you know, if you want the white sauce, no, but it's definitely a schematic, it's a guide for people that really love food and good food. If you are on a diet, or if you do the tofu thing, or you're a vegetarian, this is not the book for you. This is a book if you want to eat really great food with lots of calories, but it's good for you, too. So it is a guide. It's a very good guide. And the cocktails are great. The desserts are wonderful. And, of course, Paul's pasta is the best in the world. Pasta and pizza.
Wow.
Can't
so
go wrong with that.
We're going to definitely dive into this for the next two shows. I wanted to just start a little bit and find out. You say, Paul, you started when you were 12 years old cooking. I have a 8 and a 5-year-old, and I'm wondering, is it too early to start them off? And what did you start cooking with or as a meal when you were 12?
Well, I was Cinderella because my brothers were, who was in college, who was working. My father was working, so I had to start all the cooking. So everything, you start whatever had to be started, I would start. My father would come home and finish it, and of course then I learned how to do all that too. But it all started when I was 12.
All right.
I also learned how to do the laundry, wash the floors, wash, do all the work like that, wash the dishes, and paint the house. In fact, I started a painting business when I was 13 in the neighborhood. I would do painting for people because, you know, I'm an artist. I'm a painter as well. So, but I would do painting. I made signs for local stores. But being an Italian, as one of you knows, about food.
I'm married to an Italian, so I kind of half know.
Well, yeah, food. Well, the thing about food for Italians is food is love.
Right.
See, the whole point is food is not just food. Food is the way we communicate with one another, and food is where the heroism of the mother shines in the Italian family, because her pride has a great deal to do with taking care of her family, and taking care of her family is usually about cooking, of course, doing all the other things that women had to do in those days without any help, like washing machines, et cetera, et cetera. But the whole idea of food is it's an instant art. You do it, you serve it, people eat it, and there are smiles all around. I would say this about the book, if I may. You know, I was an ad man. I was the head of an ad agency, and I was offered the biggest jobs in the. I was one of the most prominent copywriters in my 20s. Per that, I've made some lines about the book, and one of them is, if you really want to learn how to cook Italian, throw a party and mix the drinks, this is the book for you.
And that's exactly
because
what...
everybody wants to learn how to do this, and we show them how. There's something else I should say. This is not a typical Italian cookbook, or a typical cookbook of any kind, because it's also a lifestyle book. It talks about our life, things we do, the way we interact with people in our business. And also, it is the first book that I'm aware of that actually teaches true Neapolitan cooking, which you will not find in any book I know of, the way they cooked it in Naples for hundreds of years. And I have seen no other book that has that. This is the first book to do that.
That's great. I definitely want to get into some techniques also about that.
Sure.
I want to, you know, we're going to get into that a little bit. One thing that I have a pet peeve, I do the cooking a little bit around the house here, too. Every Italian man likes to dive into that, I think. And while I do it, I find it relaxing to cook, if that makes any sense, because it gives me some time to get away from everything else. Maybe I turn on the radio, listen to this great new show I've heard of, Everything Old is New Again. And other than that, I'll listen to some music or what
have you. Oh, my God. I put it on all day. I listen to it at night to go to sleep.
Hey, I don't know how to take that. Put you to sleep or keep you company. But anyway.
Let's keep moving on.
But that being the case, do you find that in like the minute we have just before the next section, that, you know, let's try to promote the idea, I think, that cooking is a fun activity and can be relaxing and therapeutic too, no?
It is probably the most broadly based creative activity that ordinary people can do. You don't have to be Michelangelo to cook well. My mother was a phenomenal cook. My wife had no idea how to cook. We did the book. She has become at least as good a cook as I am. She might have the armamentarium that I do, the best recipes that I have collected over the years. But anything she cooks is out of this world.
See, but I think it's a good point that you bring up that it is relaxing and it is fun and it's a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
That was never my impression. That's why I never did it. I'm like, I don't want to go cook and clean up the dishes and go shop. Well, when you make it a fun thing and you have the right attitude about it, it becomes a big part of your life. And it really does enrich your life. That's an Italian thing. If you're not Italian, you're not going to understand that. So what this book does is it brings you an Italian way of life to, of course, Italians, and then those of us who didn't understand that before.
Right, and it is certainly, as Paul has said previously, it's an expression of love, too. The only thing is you got to talk to my wife and get it to get to the table while it's hot. It's always something that she's done before.
I do. That's the problem.
We'll be back on Everything Old Is New Again right after this and continue with Paul and Dee Dee Sorvino.
Beyond the sea, somewhere we are.
You're listening to Everything Old Is New Again, America's entertainment pop culture talk show with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
Goodfellas. Scorsese is, in my opinion, the best director in the world right now, and this is just plain one of the best movies I've ever seen.
It's going to be a good summer.
That's Ray Liotta as the mafioso there, and the other good fellows include Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, and Paul
Sorvino. And Paul Sorvino, there we go.
You had to have that name cut off. Yeah. That was great.
We're going to have to reinsert that. There's something
I want that guy's name. Give me that guy's name.
His name is Mike, our engineer.
Spike. Hey, Spike, don't go home alone.
This is Douglas Viviani with David Cohen.
There's a black Lincoln in front of the house now.
Just pulled up. We're sitting with Ken Scalepi as well. That was that gentleman. And of course, we've got Paul Sorvino and Dee Dee Sorvino. And they're coming out with a great new cookbook, Pinot Pasta and Parties. It's an all-in-one. You want to throw a party or you want to have an intimate romantic dinner from start to finish, including the cocktail. Get this book and you're going to be a success, that's for sure. I just wanted to turn the tide here a little bit and talk a little bit about Goodfellas. How could we not have Paul Sorvino on the show and talk Goodfellas, right?
Yep.
Talking about Martin Scorsese, who of course was the director, what is it about this gentleman that seems to follow him wherever he goes? Of course, the product that he produces on the screen seems to have such quality. Is there something that you, while working with him, were able to draw from him, or any kind of a conclusion as to what is separating him from other directors that you work with?
It's a good question. And the question is best answered by the quality of acting that he elicits. For my money, the stamp of a great director like Elia Kazan or Warren Beatty, these people understand something that most directors do not. Most directors think that they would use the actors as pawns, push them around. So we're talking about Martin. What he does and what these great directors do, and there are only just a couple, and is create a nurturant atmosphere for the actor. And what happens is when you feel safe, completely safe, and you're not going to suffer criticism, harm, insult, which a lot of directors do. They put you off your feet just to get some sort of a result. But that's not the way it is with Martin. It's not the way it was with Kazan or Warren or some of the other great directors. My hand is too many fingers to talk about the great directors. But what he does is he essentially directs improvisation. So he sends the crew away, and it's just you and the director and the actors, and we run through it, improvising all the way. And then when it feels really good, he'll say, you know, you ought to look at him and give him this or threaten him here. He speaks in results, and not results in actions and things to do, because that's what acting is. Acting is all activities, things you do, not things you be. So he'll say, you know, why don't you charm him a little bit here? He speaks in those terms, as I do when I'm directing, taking a page from the great master's playbook. But that's what gets his results, and he also knows when it's there. And that's something that, it's a built-in fecal director, detector. Because what it is he knows when something is not right, he knows when something is right. That's a rare gift. And when it's right, he calls in the crew and the director of photography, and you shoot it. So the actors are already, they're brimming, you know, that's what I do when I'm directing. They're brimming with feelings and not afraid of not knowing lines and not afraid of anything, because they've been handled like by their favorite uncle. And that's his great gift. He's the very best, and it was a singular experience, and I'm very proud to have been a part of it. Feel very lucky about it. It also served to completely typecast me as a gangster. You know, there are people, many people out there who don't think I play gangsters. They think I am a gangster. But oh well, what can you do? Actually, I'm a poet and a sculptor, an operatic tenor, a best-selling author. You know, this is my second book.
Right.
There's a lot of things I do. None of them is gangster, but I'm still very proud to have been in that, one of the greatest movies ever made.
Paul, did you, or any of the other casts that were part of the film, did you have a sense at the time how important the movie was going to be?
We did not. No, I can tell you, I know the answer right away. No, we did not. We knew that the acting looked like a very, very high quality. You know, the scenes as they went were very high quality. You felt elevated. I almost had the physical sensation of being 3 feet off the ground. But none of us knew that this was going to be what it was. And you can't know, because there's a saying in the movie business, is the film you write, the film you direct, and the film you edit. You can't really know what's going on in the shooting because you're involved with the work.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? You can't really know that you're going to get to your destination in a sailing ship because you're dealing with sails and the wind, and it's hard to know. when we got there, of course, it became... And when I first saw it, I thought it was boring, too violent, and a bad picture, and I was bad. And then about 3 hours later, I came out of the fog and realized, wait a minute, this is a great movie, and you're pretty good in it. So.
Huh. Now, Paul, what's the fascination we have with gangsters and gangster movies, do you think? Any idea?
They get away with things without any punishment, that's why. I mean, at the end, they all got punished, but it looks like... For instance, if you have a neighbor next door who's got a dog and he craps on your lawn, you might take out a gun and shoot him, but we can't do that. Gangsters can't. They do whatever the hell they want.
Well, let's talk about gangsters and old gangster movies for a moment here. I mean, did you have a fan? Oh, you're a fan of, like, Bogie and Cagney, Robinson?
Bogie is one of my favorite actors of all time, even though by modern standards his acting was a journeyman, but his insides and his charisma were phenomenal. The most charismatic actors in, you know, he, Brando, maybe John Barrymore, that's about it.
Right.
Of course, Al Pacino gets in there, and so does Bobby. But, you know, but he had a giant personality. Jack Nicholson, giant personality.
I will let you all know that with Paul, the food comes up a lot, and I think it's just because in the movies that he does, it's like, Paulie, don't put too many onions in the sauce. And he said, and then we'll be, especially in New York, we'll be eating, and it's happened almost double digits now, where the manager comes out thinking he's very clever and thinking he's the first one who's thought of it. And they come out with a plate of garlic, and they must have gone to the CVS for a razor blade, and they think that's so cool.
Right.
And we're like, oh, my gosh. I mean, so, you know, they really do associate Paul with food and cooking. And, you know, when you go to the mattresses and you have all of that, people love it. They just dig it. And I think it's I personally have always thought it's just the power. These are people who are so powerful, and they don't care, and they love it. They're tough guys, powerful guys, and the insurance agents, you know, that's going to the job 9 to 5, you know, they've got a secret thing where they wish they could be like Big Polly. So, I don't know, it seems to be, but the food's always associated with the mobster. Or it does, I know when people come running, they will run down the street after Paul.
Even cops.
Yeah. In New York, one time we thought we were going to get arrested. These cops started running down the street. We're like, oh my God, Polly! And then they're like, hey, you know, can we get a picture? We're a big fan. So anyway, the food comes up a lot, and the gangster thing comes up a lot, and the Italian thing comes up a lot. And those are all, you know, good topics to discuss.
Right. And if you want,
and I really don't think there's been a day that goes by where someone doesn't stop Paul on the street, or someone doesn't say something in a restaurant, or it's just nonstop.
Right, and that's why Pino Pasta and Parties by Dee and Paul Sorvino is something that you want to serve up and listen to and take advice from, if you will, because that's got to be a big hit from start to finish to give you a little idea as to how to present a nice meal, again, romantic or a group or a party or a family, whatever it might be. Listen to this little break in the action, and we'll be right back after this and continue with some more recipes discussing techniques. Cooking with Paul Sorvino and Dee Dee Sorvino and Everything Old Is New Again.
To returns, if you would only say
you care, I'd only go from rags to riches. I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may all be torn and tattered.
That's the a cappella. That's amazing.
This is Everything Old Is New Again, America's entertainment pop culture talk show with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
Jonathan Scheck, Stacey Edwards, George Segal, Rhea Perlman, and Paul Sorvino in a film by...
Oh, man, I got caught off. This is Douglas Viviani, and that's a film called Houdini that was, I believe, on TV, correct,
yes.
Paul?
Yes, with Ruffalo.
Yes, and that
Mark Ruffalo.
With the Hulk himself, right? Who knew?
Yeah.
Before we dive into more recipes, I just want to introduce everybody. He's back with on Everything Old Is New Again with Ken Scaleppi, Douglas Viviani, and David Cohen. And we're talking with Dee Dee and Paul Sorvino. Of course, I want to dive into some techniques here for the everyman, if you will, from the writers of Pino Pasta and Parties, which of course you can get at Amazon.com. That's easy to say, right? It's out now. It was released April 18th. So let's have some fun talking about something. I cook all the time, and I have an interest. Sometimes food, you just need to cook in a frying pan with some oil, or you mix the oil with butter. And at the end of the day, we enjoy the meal, but my wife has got a thing that stove is now a mess. Is there some way to cook on a frying pan, or is this a frying pan that I'm not using that has large enough, high enough walls, I don't know, that doesn't spray this oil everywhere?
No such thing. If you're going to cook Italian food, you're going to have a lot of cleanup.
No, I understand what your wife thinks, because my first experience with that,
yeah.
I walk into the kitchen, I'm like, what the hell? This looks like a murder scene. What happened? And there's red sauce all over our nice white stove, all over the wall, all over the floor, and I'm like, what is going on here? I was not a happy camper, but I've just learned to go with it.
Okay.
Also, I've learned that I'll go to the sink, and there are sausages sitting there. I had never seen that before in my life. It was so weird. I'm like, what is that? There are sausages in my sink. And then they're sitting on the stove, and they're cooking on the stove, and then they're in the fridge. It's just these things that pop up that I've never had in my life. Married to an Italian cook.
So the advice is, Giuliana Viviani, do me a favor and just relax, and we'll clean it up when we're done, right?
That's the only answer.
As long as the thing is, as long as the meal is acceptable and good. If the meal wasn't worth the cleanup, that's the problem, right?
It's always worth it.
There you go. So
Paul's an amazing cook. He really is. He's got such a nice hand. And everything he cooks is great. In fact, we've dropped off meatballs to people like last year, to Charlie Rose, and then to, I think, President of Showtime. And, you know, Paul does these parties here and there, and people can't get enough. He's really an amazing cook, and he enjoys it. It's fun. Well, and he sings opera while he does it. You know, we play Italian food. So it really is a party.
And that's
when we cook, when we eat, it's a party.
That's what it's all about. I mean, and Paul, talking about meat, you're going to cook beef, you cook pork, you cook all kinds of meat, and many times you want to have a nice sear on the outside of the meat. I know that you do this with steak. I saw on a Facebook post a little ways back, and my idea is to try to tell us, how do you do it? Do you need to put any kind of caramelization, any kind of sugar, any kind of sweetness on the steak or the pork or whatever, or do you just sear it straight out on the frying pan with oil or butter?
Are you talking about cooking steak?
Yeah, steak or pork or something that needs to have a little bit of a sear to it.
They're different there.
Okay.
Because you could do, let's say steak, okay?
Sure.
So steak, what I do is I put a little bit of oil, about a teaspoon of oil in the pan, and then I season the steak before I put it in, and then I put it on the highest level to sear it. And then I turn it over when it's almost black, you know, when it's fully dark brown. And I sear it on the other side, and then I lower the flame by a lot, and then let it cook.
So then you'll cook it the rest of the way in the frying pan, or do you throw it into the oven after that?
Always in the frying pan.
Keep it in the frying pan. Okay.
Sure.
And how about a barbecue?
And then there's like a mixture of salt and pepper. I mean, it's pretty simple, but it is just right. You know,
right, it's seasoning. Yeah.
But how do we, can I ask you?
Garlic powder, stuff like that.
How do we get a piece of pork to be juicy? It's always so dry
at this
house.
You got to cook it slowly, and you got to cover it. And then at the end, you want to braise it. Pork, it tends to be tough. So when I cook pork, what I do is I cook it slowly with a cover. When it's done, I turn up the flame and sear it. When I say it's done, just before it turns gray. You got to have almost a hint of pink, because they used to feed swill to hogs, which had, you know, worms in it. So, but now they don't do that.
Oh gosh.
So, but yeah, they, you know, it's your kind of worm.
You don't find any worms in the sink after, do you?
No.
So, but that's one way to do it. If you're cooking sausages, what I do, for instance, I just cooked this morning our breakfast, and I cooked using pork sausages. So what did I do? I took them out. I keep them frozen until I'm ready to go. I break off five or six of them from a flat package that I make them do at the butcher. And then I put it in a pan, put about a tablespoon of olive oil in there, add about a quarter of a cup of water, turn it on a medium flame, and cover it. When it starts to boil away, I take off the cover and let it cook, on a little higher flame. Then when all the liquid is pretty much gone, I turn them over, and when they're brown, they're ready.
So. And one thing I've learned from Paul is you really have to keep an eye on your food.
Oh, yeah.
Because before, I didn't really understand. I'll put it on the stove, go do my thing, and come back. It doesn't work that way. I mean, I will have to be having a heart attack before Paul will leave his cooking. I mean, he is very, very particular about it. It doesn't matter what's going on. It's all about his cooking.
That's why you need that glass of wine next to you to keep you at the table or keep you at the...
Well, exactly. Drinking that glass of wine, yes.
And we use wine a lot. Yeah. You know, in sauce, there's always almost always some wine. You know, it's like the masala. That it's you know, I think using alcohol in recipes is a big help.
And we'll definitely get to that shortly. I wanted to turn the tide a little bit and talk about vegetables. Like I do with carrots, I do a little something with the honey and the cinnamon, asparagus with a little bit of almonds, cauliflower. I do a little olive oil and garlic. Do you have any suggestions to make these vegetables taste good for all of us, not only kids? Just an idea.
I'm going to give you a suggestion right now.
Good.
I will guarantee that you're using extra virgin to cook it, correct?
Yes.
Wrong.
Okay.
There you go.
Do not cook with extra virgin finishing oil. It is. It gets bitter. It gets a low smoking point. It gets bitter, and now you have to add sugar or onions or something to sweeten it up.
Right.
But it's good if you're doing a mixed salad.
Finishing oil. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
And
so
then with the balsamic vinegar, and you know, that's, you know, getting the right amount there. I mean, the thing about a salad, unless you have more leaves to add. If you don't have that just right, your salad's ruined.
Right.
It's true.
Right. Now I got a couple of young kids. Give me something to help me get them to eat some of these vegetables. I mean, anything suggested
that's
in terms of...
That's hard to do.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of anything that looks like a candy to them, that is a vegetable, made of vegetables. I don't know what you do, but, I mean, I only know how to cook things like sauteed broccoli and stuff, and they're not going to like it.
Right.
Anything that's green and leafy, the kids don't eat.
All right.
Well, I don't have children, never will, never wanted to. However, I will say this. It seems like if you put a lot of cheese on anything,
right,
it will help. And that's been my experience. You know, Paul's got 5 grandchildren, so I throw cheese on everything, and it works.
Well, I'm going to make a suggestion to you for book number 2, and you can certainly just put an asterisk next to this recipe if you like. Feel free to use some nice honey and cinnamon with the with a little butter with the carrots that you cook in a frying pan, and the kids...
Carrots. When you talk about carrots,
yes,
that's what you do with carrots.
Yeah, it's great.
That's
what
you want to do.
I didn't say I was original, Paul.
Yeah, that's a very good thing to put. That's very good to use with carrots, but don't use extra virgin.
Right.
Do not cook, or I will come to your house.
Well, maybe I will. I kind of would prefer that.
You cook. Wrong.
Get Paul Servino to come visit. Just use the extra virgin.
Yeah, and it won't be nice.
Ah, see, that's the difference. Okay. And we'll get back to Paul Servino, Didi Servino, in a few minutes. And we may go into talking about wine a little bit and cooking with wine and some additional recipes and so forth on Everything Old is New Again. We're having a great time. And if you want to have a great time, just go ahead and take the dive into enjoying cooking. Grab a glass of wine, open a Pinot Pasta and Parties by Didi and Paul Servino on Everything Old is New Again. Turn that on the radio as well, and you're going to have a grand party for yourself. And at the end of the day, believe me, this is going to be a meal that you'll remember. We'll be back on Everything Old is New Again.
Now, back to America's entertainment pop culture talk show, Everything Old is New Again, with Douglas Viviani and David Cohen.
I have never been prouder of a group of men in my life. This ball club will be remembered by me forever, because you have heart as big as this city, and you showed what being New Yorkers is all about.
It's all about that Paul Sorvino's mentor, just with regards to the role he played in curveballs along the way, 1997. That, of course, is Joe Torre of the Yankees. My co-host here, Ken Scalepi, is a huge Yankee fan. We saw that presentation of Joe Torre and that you presented. We're here with Paul Sorvino and Didi Sorvino. Did you have an experience or, you know, any kind of interaction with Mr. Torre before you were able to present the role, so that he'd give you a little bit of insight? What he was thinking about?
I had met him once
socially just quickly. You know, he was out of town a lot, so I couldn't really meet with him. But what I did was use a lot of film, which is I always do when I'm doing someone who is alive or recently alive, or we have film on. So I would study the film for dozens and dozens of hours, start my imitation of the externals, meaning the speech, the walk. And by doing that, usually around the second or third week of that, the character just starts to infuse my whole body. It's like an inhabitation. When you find a character, when you're an actor, and you find the character, it feels like an inhabitation. It's not like putting on a jacket. It's like becoming something else. And it happens to you if you're good. It doesn't happen to everybody, but it happens to good actors.
Oh, you were born in Brooklyn, right, Paul?
Yes.
Now the question is, were you a Yankee fan back then, or what?
Oh, are you kidding?
Everyone asks him. It's so funny. Yankees are mad.
Hey, well, I don't know the time frame if the Dodgers were still around. Were they still around when you were a kid there?
Of course they were.
I know, honey, but I'm going to bust you a little bit. Because sometimes you say the Yankees. Admit it.
Oh, I do say the Yankees now. Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
okay, all right. I just want to make sure we were clear on that. So
for us,
before, when you were a boy and they were the Brooklyn Dodgers, but then when they left L.A., forget it, and then
I
it's Yankees.
I haven't forgiven them for that.
Okay, there you go.
So
make sure we clarify that.
Nobody in my generation forgives the Dodgers for moving.
So you did not link on to Tommy Lasorda then, and I think he's got a cookbook or two out there.
Lasorda's a nice guy. I met him. He was a nice guy.
But you didn't.
But that's got nothing to do with it. If the Dodgers left, then goodbye. And that's
right. But usually, Dodger fans didn't become Yankee fans, though. That was unusual.
Well, only because I played Joe Torre.
Okay.
And then I became a Yankee fan.
There you go. Dee, are you a bit of a fan at all of baseball, or no?
Well, I grew up in Indiana, so I'm more of a basketball person. But I will tell you, I always loved it when Spike Lee and Reggie Miller, I mean, that's been a while, but I always love that exchange, and I like the talking trash thing.
Okay.
And but no, I love baseball. I mean, I'm more of a Yankees person. I just feel that, I don't know, I just like their style better. And I think that all sports are good, but I love basketball the best. And, you know, New York Knicks, and New York's got some great teams.
So,
I love sports, more so than Paul. I'm more of a sports person.
All right, so now if you're going to sit down...
Paul, he's into the music, and... he's a Renaissance man. He likes everything. But, you know, he likes the sculpting and the music and the cooking and the acting. And, you know, and the thing about Paul, he does it all very well. He's just so good at everything.
And
I'm sure you all probably know that he did a sculpture of Jackie Robinson that was unveiled last year in Times Square. And now, just so you know, it's sitting in the Montreal courthouse because that's where Jackie Robinson started his career. And we're going to do an unveiling, I think, this summer. Paul and I, and Paul is a big part, I'm a little part, are doing a movie called Little Italy. I'm sure you're shocked.
Yeah.
About cooking and Italians and that sort of thing. So hopefully it'll happen then. But, you know, Paul has a very nice memory of the Brooklyn Dodgers and that team. And then now that he's been able to sculpt Jackie Robinson, and it's this absolutely beautiful sculpture. And that kind of sticks with us. And, in fact, we've got one in our home. We've got a replica in our home.
Wow, that's great. Let's turn the tide just a little bit. I hate to move along, but because you could probably have a whole show on that. But I want to play a clip here, a smidge of a clip, see if you recognize where these two sound bites are from.
Come on, Eddie. I'm paying you well. Does it matter who I work for?
It matters to me. I may not make an honest buck, but I'm 100% American.
Course,
and I don't work for no two-bit Nazi.
Rocket here.
Look what you did to your pretty tuxedo.
Big boy, ain't we pals?
No pals in this business, Lips. You taught me that. Sign it.
The deed to the Club Ritz?
That's right. I'm going into show business now.
There you go. Paul, I heard you say the Rocketeer. The second one got a ring of bell.
Dick Tracy.
Absolutely. And so, therefore, you acted with 007 himself and the Godfather of Godfathers, maybe you'd say. The question is, you've acted with many legends besides yourself. Is there any that stand out that you want to throw a little bit of a nod to?
Al Pacino.
Okay. And in what way?
One of the greatest actors of the last 100 years. You could argue that he is the best. I mean, of course, I hold the brief
Paul's
that Brando
better. We love Al, but Paul's better.
That's wonderful. That's my wife talking.
Said by a loving wife, exactly.
Yeah. I'm pretty good. I'm not going to be falsely modest. I'm pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I of course, hold the brief that Brando is the best we ever had. But Al is even rangier. I mean, Al is just... God, we were watching the Godfather epic a couple of months ago. It's astonishing how good he is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just astonishing.
And he's very nice. We just saw him maybe a month and a half ago, and he came running over. You know, he was on the phone, dropped the phone when he was talking to, I don't know who it was, he came running over to say hi to Paul. Very, very nice person. But here's a bit of trivia you all probably don't know about Dick Tracy. You know, of course, Al Pacino played Big Boy. Well, that part was written for Paul by Warren Beatty, and Paul turned it down. You know, when he's busy, I'm not sure, you know, what the circumstances were exactly, but it's good to know that Big Boy was supposed to be played by Big Pollock.
See that? And let's look, continue along that line and listen to a clip of, this is from Dick Tracy. You're not going to, we'll see if you can tell what this is. It's very short, and it leads us into some food discussion. Little bizarre. That is someone eating oysters.
I don't know what that is.
That's a character called Lips, played by Paul Sorvino, eating oysters.
Oh, yeah, I know that, but I didn't know what that
is. You were slurping the... Yeah, that must have been what it was, right?
Quite memorable,
slurping,
I'm sure.
Slurping oysters, was that the part?
Yes. And that brings us back to food. I guess I'm trying to do a little segue there. I don't know if it worked or not. But
I liked it.
Can you give us an example, either one of you, of the chapters, the 10 chapters, without getting into the recipes, of course, but just where are we at? I know there's La La Land, there's We Love New York, there's Sing for Your Supper, so kind of what kind of food are we looking at? Are we seafood, pasta, everything, or where are we going with this?
We have it all.
Yeah, well, the La La Land chapter, which, you know, I really much, much, much prefer New York. I wish I could be there all the time. But, you know, my husband's a movie star. You've got to be in Hollywood somewhere. So the La La Land's a little lighter. You know, New York, I mean, that's like real New York food and New York pizza. You know, and we've got a Made in America, too. But, you know, also we have patriotism and play and Nice Guy Means Pundit. So it's just kind of fun menus. But there's always the theme of Italian, always.
Okay.
That's the base.
What
so
type of...
lots of pasta, we've got pizzas, we've got, you know, just a lot of good starters, a little bit of everything. I would say that if you were a food snob, you might be snobby about our book, because we have a lot of fun with it, and we really don't care.
Right.
I mean, it's just good food, it's a fun, there are fun menus, good stories, and good alcohol, you know, and that's it.
I would just jump in and say that one thing that this book does is it gives you 15 Neapolitan recipes you will not find anywhere else, and it teaches you how to make the major Neapolitan sauces. One is marinara, one is filetto di pomodoro, and the other is ragu, not the stuff you find in a jar. I'm talking about the Italian meat sauce, often known as the gravy, Sunday gravy.
And we will pick that up next week with Paul Sorvino.
Exactly how to make that.
Exactly. What a great pickup. We're going to dig into that next week on Everything Old is New Again. Take a look. Get that book, Pino Pasta and Parties. Pino Pasta and Parties on Amazon.com. We'll be right back next week. Paul Sorvino and Dee Dee Sorvino.